respectful of y'all's time. So without further ado, we'll hand our attention back over to Dr. Parker.
All righty, let's jump back in. So we looked at the L for life, which is learn and obey. The I in life stands for invite others to become disciples. Invite others to become disciples. And so when we think about this idea of inviting others to become disciples, I'm going to kind of really unpack that in just a moment. But let me just ask you, why should you and I invite others to become disciples? That's what we're told to do. Exactly. That's what we're told to do. Great. What's another reason?
Somebody did that for us.
Somebody did that for us. Exactly. Somebody did that for us. Any other reasons you can think of? Okay. It's profitable. It does. It makes a difference. And we're going to look at that as well. All of these are reasons that you and I as believers, as disciples, should invite others to become disciples. Let me give you three. We've already covered these pretty much. But one is that Jesus invited people. We see that early on in his earthly ministry, that Jesus invited other people to follow him, to become his disciples. He gave you and I the example of what it looks like. The second reason is, and it's probably hard for you to see up there, is that Jesus commanded you and I to do it. It's our responsibility to invite people to become disciples, to enter into a relationship with Jesus or go deeper in their relationship with Jesus. And then the third reason is people respond to a personal invitation. Somebody did it for you. Somebody did it for me. And there's a correlation in this that people actually do respond to a personal invitation. Now, I want you to hear me say this tonight, is that we are primarily talking about the idea that you and I have a responsibility to invite people into a discipleship relationship with Jesus, okay? So either I'm inviting a lost person into a saving relationship with Jesus, so I'm sharing my story, I'm sharing the gospel, I'm walking them through the plan of salvation, and so my goal is to invite them into this relationship with Jesus, or I'm inviting people to go deeper in their relationship that they already have with Jesus. When we talk about this idea of inviting people to become disciples, the idea is that we want to fulfill the Great Commission. We want to invite lost people to become a disciple, but we also want to invite saved people to grow deeper in their discipleship relationship. One of the ways that you and I can do that is by inviting people to church. Invite others to church should be like the next thing on your handout, is that you and I can invite people to church. I believe wholeheartedly that inviting people to church can open doors for invitations to become a disciple of Jesus Christ. By me inviting somebody to come with me, to join me in church, is opening the door for them to hear the gospel. And it shouldn't be the only time they hear the gospel. I have a responsibility. You have a responsibility. But we know when they come here that in your Sunday school class, we're hoping they're going to hear the good news of the gospel. And then in the worship service, we're hoping they're going to hear the news of the gospel. If they're already a believer, then as a Sunday school teacher, you're trying to help them to go deeper into that relationship. And so inviting people to come to church is a way for you and I to invite them to become disciples. I'm a firm believer that one of the biggest lies that Satan has convinced you and I of is that people do not respond to an invitation. People do not respond to us inviting them. I believe that we, for some reason, whatever the reason may be, is I think he's used that to convince us, well, don't do it. They're not going to respond. If you invite them, they're not going to come. They're not going to be favorable. And yet, statistics show you and I that that is not the case. In 2018, Lifeway did a survey. I hope that they'll do it again soon. But they did a survey of 50,000 people. Of those 50,000 people, 75 to 80% indicated that a personal invitation resulted in them attending church. 75 to 80% said, because somebody invited me, I'll come back to church. I've been reading through a book called The Great Dechurching. And we all are familiar with the term, people are unchurched. But the new term is they're dechurched, which means there was a period in their history that they were in church, but they've made a conscious decision to dechurch, to remove themselves from the church. And in that book, toward the end of every section, they have the people that they survey divided up into different categories. But at the end of every one of those, they ask them, if you were to consider returning to church, what would be one reason that you would do it? And one of the reasons is if somebody would just invite me. If somebody would just simply invite me, I would consider coming back to church, whatever the case may be. And so inviting people to church does make a difference. So that leads you and I to have to ask ourselves the question then, who should I invite? Now, I'm not talking about the names of specific people, but broad categories of people. What are some broad categories that you can think of? Here's a group of people that I should consider inviting them to church. What? Coworkers, absolutely. Coworkers that are unchurched or dechurched or whatever. Hey, let's invite them to come to church. Who else comes to mind? Friends, absolutely. I want to invite my friends to come to church. Should be one of the easiest groups we have to invite. Who else comes to mind? Neighbors, family. Okay, all right, neighbors, family. That we want to invite those individuals to come to church. Let me give you five. You've hit almost all of these except for the last one. I'm going to explain that one in just a minute. So the first group is, y'all, and people can fit into any one of these, is lost people. You and I as believers should intentionally be inviting lost people to come to church. It should be a priority of our life that we're looking for lost people. In the state of Mississippi, there are approximately 3 million of us in the state of Mississippi, and only 1 million claim to have a personal relationship with Jesus. And so what that tells me is this, is that every day you and I are encountering lost people. Now, if you ask them, are you a Christian, that number jumps to about 80%. But if you ask them, do you have a personal relationship with Jesus, only 33% of Mississippians will say yes to that question. So what that tells me is this, is that when you and I run down the road to Dollar General, we probably rubbed elbows with a lost person. When I'm in the grocery store, I probably encountered a lost person. I probably have a coworker that's lost. I probably have a family member that's lost. I mean, we could go on and on, but the reality is if that statistic is true and we believe it is very accurate, then that means they're all around us, and we've got to begin to identify those individuals to invite them to church. So we want to invite lost people. We want to invite neighbors or friends. On this slide, it's going to say neighbors. You can call them friends. But who around you is unchurched or dechurched? We want to invite them. We want to invite coworkers. Probably we have coworkers that are lost or they just aren't attending church, whatever the case may be. And we want to intentionally invite them to come and to be a part of church. We want to invite family members. Probably most of us have a family member or a couple of family members who are either lost or they just are not going to church. They claim to have a relationship, but for whatever reason, they've gotten out of the habit of going to church. Are we inviting them to come, and are we inviting them to be a part of church? The last one really pertains more to you as a Sunday school teacher in a class. The last group is this. You and I need to be inviting worship attenders to attend Sunday school. There are individuals, I would say, in every church that I go in that come to worship. They're in the worship service, but they are not plugged in to a Bible study, to a Sunday school class. They're simply slipping in for the worship service, and they're slipping out. And the reality is, y'all, they are already here. They're already coming. We just got to get them to come earlier and get them to come to your class or to a Sunday school class. And so they're already here. They're going to be one of the easiest groups, I would hope, to get to move. But I would tell you almost every church I go into, there's an increase in people that are coming just to worship, but they're not attending a group. They're not attending a small study, Bible study. And so you and I need to begin to identify who are they? who are those individuals that, man, we just need to make an invitation for them to come and for them to join us in the process of Sunday school. When we think about inviting people, I believe this has to be true, that you and I must learn to invite with accountability. Okay? And I'm going to unfold what that means really quickly. You and I must learn to invite people with accountability. All right? Normally, and I'm not saying this is always the case, but typically, as church people, this if, and I'm going to use the word if we invite people to come to church, it looks something like this. Whether it's in the grocery store or whether they're at their mailbox and I pull up beside them and have a conversation with them, or I see them at a football game or whatever, and I know that they're not in church, okay? This is somewhat what that conversation looks like. We're having a conversation, and then somewhere along the way, I simply say, hey, we would love for you to come and worship with us at Mount Zion. Sunday school starts at this time. Worship starts at this time. We would love for y'all to come. They kind of nod their head. Yeah, I'm kind of interested. And we go, okay, great. And we walk off. We've done the inviting and we're finished. And what I would tell you is there's no place other than church that we're that casual with our invitation. And here's what I mean by that. If you invite me to your house for dinner, you're going to make sure that I know what time to get there. You're going to make sure if I've never been that I have your address, or at least you tell me which tree to turn by so I'll know which road to go down, okay? Or you tell me how many mailboxes to count. You're going to give me the details. You might even ask me, hey, I'm planning to have this. Are you okay with that? Are you allergic to it? Do you like it? I mean, I'm going to give you some. Oh, and by the way, hey, so-and-so's also coming. Just wanted you to know they're going to be there. If you invite me to a college basketball game or a college football game, you're going to tell me what day it is. You're going to tell me what time the game starts. You're probably going to tell me that you're driving and that you'll pick me up at a certain time. And if for some reason that particular day we're all wearing the same color, you're going to tell me that. You're going to tell me, hey, we're going to stop afterwards for dinner. I mean, y'all, we give all kind of details to ensure that I'm going to go with you to that ball game, that I'm going to go with you to that meal or whatever the case may be. But when it comes to church, hey, we have church at this time and we would really like for you to come. It's a completely different invitation. What if we put the same energy and the same effort into inviting people to church that we do to inviting them to our house for dinner or to a ball game or out to supper or whatever the case may be? What if, as you're having that conversation and they kind of nod at you, I'm really interested in coming. And then you say to them, I tell you what, Sunday morning, I will meet you about 15 minutes before Sunday school out in the parking lot, and I will help you get to a Sunday school class. Hey, I will walk with you. Matter of fact, we'll make sure your children get to Sunday school first, and then I'll make sure you get to Sunday school afterwards. Or they're in your Sunday school class, and you turn to them and say, hey, I hope you're staying for worship. Why don't you follow me over, and you can sit with me. You can sit with me on my row. Hey, afterwards, let's go out to dinner. Let's go out to lunch. There's things that you and I can do to put some accountability to our invite, but also lessen some of the stress that they have of coming to church. If you're talking about a young family that has children, okay, I can go ahead and tell you that young mom is worried about one thing. Is her children going to be taken care of? Are they going to be safe? While she's over here in another Sunday school class, is her kids okay? As she's sitting in that worship service, are their needs being met? Where are they going to go? Who is their teacher? There's all these anxieties that she's coming with that you can help lessen by walking with her or the whole family to that room and introducing them to the teacher and making sure they're situated. If you're talking to a person that's de-churched, then I'm going to go ahead and tell you, they have some history about church that's caused them to leave. And so they're worried, am I going to encounter that when I go back? Am I going to sit in somebody's seat? and get told to, and be told to move. That does happen, by the way, in some churches. But here's the deal is, if they're with me and they're sitting with me, then probably nobody's going to say, hey, you need to move. Or there's little things that we can do. So let me tell you this. A couple of weeks ago, I had some friends to actually text me and just say, hey, we're at a point in life that we've moved. They're still kind of in the same area they were in, but we've moved and we just really feel like that we need to attend church somewhere else. And we just don't know what to do. And we're just curious if you could kind of help us. What could you do? And so last week, I actually had dinner with them. I walked them through and said, hey, guys, I'm going to give you like five churches. None of them are a bad decision. You just got to figure out the one that's right for you and the one that the Lord's leading you to. And but I hope that'll help you. And so as we were leaving, I said, by the way, Sunday morning, I'm not preaching anywhere. And so I'm planning to be at my church. And I would love to meet y'all about 10, 15 minutes before the service. You can walk in with me. You can sit with me. I'll kind of show you where we're going. And so they were like, man, that would be phenomenal. That would be great. And so yesterday afternoon, I sent them a text message. Hey, I'm still planning to go tomorrow. I would love to meet y'all. I would love for y'all to walk in with me. I'll help you get situated. And they text back and go, that would be phenomenal. And so this morning, I got there a few minutes early and I waited on them to come and I walked them in. Now, this is a family that's been in church, not in the church we were going to, but y'all, they've been in church. They've not been out of church. But I cannot tell you in that hour and a half how many times both of them said, thank you for helping us today. Thank you for making it easier. I mean, y'all, multiple times I had them to tell me that today. It makes a difference. And you and I have got to learn to invite with accountability. If there's somebody in the worship service, what if you said to them, hey, next Sunday, I would love for you to come to Sunday school with me and I'll meet you out front and you can walk in with me. So instead of them walking into a room with all these eyes staring at them, they're walking in with you. You're lessening the stress. You're helping them in the process. And so I believe that you and I have got to be more intentional with the way that we invite people, but they're just waiting for an invitation. So one way is we invite people to church. Another thing is this, as we think about inviting people to become disciples, you and I have a responsibility to invite others into a disciple-making relationship, okay? Inviting others into a disciple-making relationship. Sunday school teachers, one of the things that is a responsibility of yours is for you to lead your learners to disciple other people. Are you encouraging them to walk alongside someone else and disciple them and to help them to grow and to help them mature in their faith? So not only are you discipling them, but you're encouraging them to disciple other people. Now, with preschool and children, that's not going to happen. But if you're their teacher, what you begin to do is you begin to talk to them about the importance of what it looks like to disciple. Hey, Jesus discipled. Here's how Jesus did it. It's part of our responsibility as believers. We aren't saved just for the sake of being saved, but we're saved in order that we might invest. Preschool and children can begin to pick up on those concepts even at an early age. And so you, as the preschool children's teacher, you're kind of setting the groundwork even at that age so that when they become teenagers and adults, they've heard it. They understand this is what it looks like. Hey, let me tell you about so-and-so in our church that's doing this. And you give them an example of what that looks like. But part of that is, guys, we've got to lead our class members to go deeper in God's Word and to study God's Word. And so part of that is we're encouraging them, hey, find two or three people that you can invest in, that you can pour your life in. The other area that I want to hang out just for a minute on, and I'm going to go quickly, Sunday school teachers. Sunday school teachers, you need to be discipling an apprentice teacher. You need to be discipling an apprentice teacher. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. Probably you in your church, most churches do this. Sunday school teachers, you have a sub, okay? That's what we like to call them oftentimes. And what that means is this. Two times a year when you're out, maybe three times a year, you call them and say, hey, I'm going to be out on Sunday. Will you teach for me? maybe two, maybe three Sundays a year. The idea behind the apprentice teacher is this, Sunday school teachers. You're investing in the life of somebody that you're raising them up to be the next Sunday school teacher. Whether that's their the Sunday school teacher for the class you're teaching, or whether that's you're raising them up to go and to fill another Sunday school class because there's a need over here. See, what's happened is this, all across our convention, Mississippi is true for this. I do not go in a church. I've not been in a church yet in my 3 years in the building where pastors looked at me and said, Brother Duane, we got more Sunday school teachers than we know what to do with. They're hanging off the ceiling. No. Y'all, every church I go into, this is what I hear. We don't have enough. We would love to start this new class, or we need somebody over here, and we just don't have them. And it's because we've not raised them up. We've not invested in them in order that they might be the Sunday school teacher. And what now is happening is this. We now not only have a shortage of Sunday school teachers, we have a shortage of young men going into the ministry to be pastors, to be youth ministers, to be worship leaders. And we have churches all across our state that are now looking 2 and 3 years to fill a position because we've not raised up the next generation of leaders. And so as an apprentice teacher, Sunday school teachers, and this is for all of you, if you're the teacher of a preschooler, then you want another teacher in that room with you that you're molding and shaping to be the next preschool teacher or children's teacher, whatever the case is. That apprentice is going to teach every 4 or 5 Sundays, even with you in the room. You're going to give them opportunities to teach or preach. Some of them probably will preach, but to teach, okay, with you there. And then you find a time to get with them and say, hey, here's some things you did excellent, but could I encourage you to think about this? Because here's the number one reason that I hear people say, oh, no, I'm not going to teach. I've never done it. Brother Duane, I've never been a Sunday school teacher. Well, if you're the apprentice, you can't use that as an excuse because you have taught every 4 or 5 weeks for a year or for 2 years, and you as the lead teacher are investing in them to raise them up. Now, I want to be careful with this and this what I'm about to tell you because I've already said this, but you got to think about it this way. Who's going to take your place? Now, the reality is this. They may not take your place. They may take the place of another teacher, but you get what I'm trying to say. Who are you investing in that's going to be that next teacher? And so as an apprentice teacher is different from a sub, I'm really going to pour into this person and really try to help them be the next person. They may not be ready today, okay, but they might be ready in a year or 2 years. But if I'm not giving them the opportunity, they're never going to be ready. We were talking about this at dinner a minute ago. In my department, I have a student ministry consultant, and then I have a preschool and children's ministry consultant. My preschool and children's ministry consultant, when she goes to do a training like this just with preschool and children's teachers, usually you have the teacher of that room, and then you have what we like to call helpers, okay? And here's what you would hear Angie say. There are no helpers in preschool and children's ministry. Everybody's a leader. Every adult's a leader. And so how do we invest them? How do we help them in that process? And so teachers, I would challenge you to look for that. Let's move on to the F really quickly. The F stands for this. We want Sunday school to be a place where people can form deeper relationships. We want Sunday school to be a place where people can form deeper relationships. People are not just looking for friendly groups and churches. They are searching for friends. We can be friendly and yet never offer opportunity for somebody to be our friend, okay? And there's a difference. Since COVID, what we are seeing really all across the United States when it comes to church, and I want you to hear me carefully. I don't want you to mishear what I'm about to tell you. Here's what statistics are showing us. People are looking for community, relationships, friendships over content. Now, it doesn't mean that content's not important. Do not walk out of here and say, Brother Duane said content's not important. That is not what I'm telling you. It is very, very important. But what's going to get them there and what's going to keep them is the community. It's the friendships. It's the connection. That's what they're looking for. And I'm going to say this, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, but I want you to hear me, Sunday school teachers. You may not be the most dynamic Sunday school teacher that you've ever heard. But if you build relationships with your people, they will stick with you forever. You can deliver a okay lesson, but if they have a relationship with you, they're going to buy into every word you say, and they're going to listen to you because it's valuable. You can be the most effective communicator and have no relationship, and you're going to get nowhere. People aren't going to follow you. And I love this. Carrie Newhoff is a podcaster, and Carrie Newhoff has done a lot of research in this whole thing about community, and I love what he says. His exact words, no one should out-community the church. No one. We should do it better than anybody else because we understand the love of Jesus. We understand that we're to love Him and that we're to love people. And so you and I have got to make sure that inside of our classrooms that we are cultivating deeper relationships. Let me give you three quick ways to do that. One is what I like to call care groups. And so inside your Sunday school class, you have smaller groups that focus on care. You as the Sunday school teacher cannot prepare your lesson and do that all effectively and then really effectively care for everybody in your classroom. If you have 20 or 30 people or whatever the case may be, that may be getting a little high. But even if you have 15 people, what if you broke them down into three groups of five or into five groups of three, and you had one person that's the care group leader, and the responsibility of that person is to care for every member every week? That's the key to a care group. Every member gets a contact every week, not just when you're out. But everybody in my care group is going to hear from me sometime this week. It may be a verse of scripture. It may be a phone call. It may be I'm praying for you. How can I pray for you? Whatever the case may be, but I want to make sure that every member is being cared for every week. It doesn't leave you out as the teacher because as a care group leader, they have the responsibility then to funnel things back to you to make sure you as the teacher know, hey, I reached out to so-and-so and I found out they're having surgery next week. You as the teacher still know. Then you as the teacher, then guess what you do? You make sure your staff knows because usually they're the last ones to know. But you're caring for everybody. There's no statistical research for this, so let me tell you this. But I'm a firm believer that the reason that we as churches lost so many people after COVID is because we did not care well. And we had church members that went 4 and 5 and 6 months and nobody from the church ever reached out to them to say, how are you? Can we help you? Can we do anything for you? We're praying for you. But those that had connections, they came back for the most part. And those that didn't are still out there waiting for somebody to care. And so we need to think about how can we care better and do that by going smaller. The next thing is by having fellowships. As a Sunday school class, I believe you should have 2 or 3 fellowships a year outside of Sunday morning, just to get together and to hang out. You want to talk about a great place to invite an unchurched person to? That they are more likely to come to a fellowship the first time, which then opens the door for them to come to Sunday school and to come to church. Hey, we're just going to get together for a fellowship that we might get to know each other, that we might get to bond with each other a little bit better. The third way is this, is we cultivate relationships by developing new classes, by creating new Sunday school classes. New Sunday school classes will grow faster than existing Sunday school classes. New Sunday school classes provide opportunities for people to connect with a friendship better than existing classes do. New Sunday school classes will increase your Sunday school attendance on average by 10 people for every new Sunday school class. There are all these advantages to creating new classes. And so part of that is we got to identify, hey, where's a group of people that we don't have a class for? Or do we have a class that now is a small church and it's time to multiply and create a new class out of that class. We don't divide classes. We multiply classes. We create new classes. There's a big difference in that. But we need to constantly be thinking about that, because here's what happens. After a class has been in existence for 2 or more years, there's a pretty tight bond among the people in that classroom. And even though it's open, and even though we're loving and we're welcoming, it's really hard for a new person to break in to that existing class. But if every 2 years we're creating a new class, it breaks up the dynamics of the existing class so that new people can go in that class, and it also offers a new area for new people to go in. So ultimately what happens is both classes grow because we kind of broke that up. But we get really comfortable sometimes, and we don't realize that even though we're loving and we're welcoming, we've been together so long, when a class member cracks a joke, we have all the history to why they said that, and we chuckle. And that new member's going, I don't have a clue what they just talked about. You get what I'm saying? Because we've been together so long. And so we've got to find ways to create this opportunity for more people to connect in the life of our church. And so new classes really help us to do that. Okay? All right. The last thing, and then I'll let you ask some questions and we're going to be done. The last area that your class needs to think about, I'm basically going to mention this and you can flesh this out later. Sunday school needs to be a place where we can learn and obey God's word, a place where we can invite others to become disciples, a place where we can form deeper relationships. And the last thing is this: Sunday school needs to be a place where we engage in acts of service. A place where we engage in acts of service. How is your Sunday school class serving? How is your Sunday school class making a difference? I want you to see this quote by J.T. English. It says this: if our disciple-making strategy doesn't lead to missions or to serving, we're not producing disciples of Jesus. One of the ways that you and I know that people are becoming disciples is they have a heart to serve. They have a heart to give back. It's one of the characteristics that, hey, this is an indicator that this person is becoming the disciple that God's called them to be, is they have a heart to make a difference, to build a community. And one of the very first places that we need to do that is inside the local church. How are we serving our church? How are you as a Sunday school teacher championing your class members to serve the church? For example, Sunday school teachers, I would encourage you periodically to remind your class members, here are some ministry opportunities inside of our church. Here's some ways that you can plug in to what our church family is doing. We need people in the nursery. We need people to go on this mission trip. When it gets time for the new Sunday school year and you start hearing the buzz that we need new Sunday school teachers, tell your class it is okay if you go and serve somewhere else. Sometimes they just need to feel that they're being released by you, the teacher, to go and to serve and to make a difference. The way I like to put it is this: if your entire Sunday school class were to cease to exist tomorrow, would Mount Zion miss you? Are you making such a difference as a Sunday school class within this body of believers that if your entire Sunday school class ceased to exist tomorrow, they'd go, oh my word, what are we going to do? They were doing this, and they were involved in this, and they were serving over here, and they were a champion of this. I mean, there's all these things, and that's the kind of Sunday school class every class needs to be. We begin to model that even in preschool and children's ministry as we come to such things as offerings. If you're doing Lottie Moon Christmas offering, hey, let's find a way to teach our preschoolers it's important to give. Here's something we can do. Our children's ministry, here's something that we can do. Our teenagers, how can they help with Vacation Bible School? How can they go on a mission trip? We start early planting that seed, but every class should be so connected to serving the church that if even one class were to cease existing, the whole body would feel that absence. We got to be careful that we don't turn inward and our only focus is what happens in the four walls of our room. There's a bigger mission out there that we've been all called to be a part of the kingdom. And so how are we serving inside the local church? And the last thing is, and you can flesh this out later, is how are you serving your community? How is your Sunday school class making a difference in your community? How can we be engaged in helping our community see the need for the gospel and to see the need for Jesus Christ? Okay? So let me ask you really quickly, what questions do you have? It's a lot of stuff, I know. That's why you have another sheet where you can take it home and think through it and process it. Hey, as you're thinking about questions, on the very back page, you will find the Mississippi Baptist or the Discipleship of Sunday School logo. You'll see my name in print and my ministry assistants and my two consultants. Five of you out beside those four names, you have a lowercase d, p, with a circle around it. There should be five of you. If you'll raise your hand, I have a gift for you, wherever you might be. I'm coming that way. There should be five. This is a little Ultimate Bible Study Guide that basically walks you through every book of the Bible. It kind of gives you some history. My favorite thing is every section points you back to Jesus and helps you to figure out how that book of the Bible connects back to Jesus. A great, great resource as you're studying and prepping and getting ready for Sunday school. All right, questions? Can't cheat. You probably already have one anyway. All right.
Dr. Parker, I have a question.
What's your question?
How do you get to church 15 minutes early?
How?
Yeah.
Well, first of all,
I'm kidding. You don't have to answer.
I can't answer it. You have to plan. You have to plan. And let me say this on that subject. Some of you are already thinking, Brother Dwayne, you just don't know my class. You don't understand my class. Well, you got to start somewhere to begin to change the culture. They know you're going to wait on them, so why start early? You follow me? And so you've got to begin to say, this is what we're going to do. They know that, for example, that their boss is expecting them to be at work at a certain time. So for the most part, they're going to be there. And so you got to kind of begin to set that culture. This is what we're going to do. And to think about what does it communicate. But also, I just think, it goes back to what I said to you earlier, guys. God has entrusted you for this period of time to disciple them and to help them grow. And we cannot afford to lose even 1 minute in that endeavor. That's how I see it. And so we got to start somewhere. Not necessarily bad. I mean, I think for the most part, y'all, I think for the most part is we want everybody to hear the entire lesson. We have prepared all week. And we want everybody to prepare the entire lesson. And we all know, let's just be honest, there are going to be individuals, no matter what you do, they are not going to be on time. I mean, we just know that's going to happen. But I've got to be a good steward of the time that God's given me to teach. And I also got to be a good steward of the people that God's given me. And so that means I'm going to start, and if they come in late, they come in late. I mean, it's okay. It's okay if they come in. You don't have to go back and recap everything that you shared before they got there. I think what you will see over some time, they may never be there exactly on time, but I think you'll begin to see them come earlier because they realize, oh my, I'm missing part of it. But right now, they're not missing anything. And so you got to kind of begin to shift that culture. And I think most everybody knows when to start on time. It's a matter of doing it.
Dwayne,
yep.
You mentioned getting other people in your class to serve. So
yes.
Just imagine a Sunday school class, 10 to 12 people.
Right.
How many, if you were the teacher of a class that size, how many volunteer positions, coordinators would you try and develop? Care, fellowship,
work? I would say, three or four, I would really, really encourage you to do the care groups Because I think sometimes we forget people, especially if you have a large Sunday school role, we forget people. And so by putting them in a care group, even if they're not coming, they know that somebody's going to reach out to them at some point during the week just to say, I'm praying for you. Not to say, hey, we missed you and we hope you'll come back. Don't do that, okay? I care about you whether you come or not. That's what you want to communicate. I love you regardless of whether you're here. It's not conditional. But when I say, when 1 week I say, hey, I'm praying for you, I hope things are going well, and the next week I say, well, I really wish you would come back, what I've just said to them is my love for you is conditional. But I'm going to love you regardless, because here's what I believe, y'all. There's going to come a point in their life, if they're not coming, that they're going to experience a crisis. And guess who's going to have the greatest opportunity to meet that need? You, your Sunday school class, even though they're not coming. So I think care groups. I would encourage you Sunday school teachers to have a fellowship coordinator. There again, you cannot do all the teaching, prepping, and then do a good job at that. And then I would encourage you to have potentially have what I would kind of call an outreach person. Your care groups are going to kind of do your in-reach, but who's going to follow up with that guest when they show up? The other thing that you'll find is this: the more you can give away, the more buy-in your class members will have, and the more likely they are to show up. When you have a responsibility, you are much more likely to be there. Do the same thing with them. Give them opportunity. You could even have a prayer coordinator, somebody that takes all the prayer requests, and then on Monday or Tuesday, they're sending a text message or an email to everybody in that class. Here's the prayer requests that were mentioned yesterday. You can have a prayer coordinator. But I would say small groups, at least at the minimum, and then the fellowship and outreach, I would say somewhere along the way. You can do this with teenagers, preschool and children. You can't do that necessarily, but you can begin to talk to them about the importance of caring and outreach and begin to lay those foundations for later in life. You can kind of work as a team on that. So you can kind of just figure out, these are the children that should be a part of my class, and then what adult class should they be in, and kind of coordinate those two things together. Another thing that we've not talked about, and this is where your church leadership will need to help you, Sunday school teachers, is that you have potential class members that are serving somewhere else. For example, there's a couple that should be in your Sunday school class, but they're over here serving fifth and sixth graders, okay? They need to be in a care group. We call those serving members, but here's the deal is they need to be probably cared for more than anybody else on your roll. That lady who is teaching 2 and 3 year olds every single week needs to be in somebody's care group that she gets a text message, hey, we're praying for you. Because I can tell you something, no preschooler is going to tell her that she's praying for them or that she loves them or she cares about them. And what we also see is this: sometimes people are leery to leave your class to go serve somewhere else, even though they feel a calling and even though they see the need. Why? Because they're so afraid, I'm going to miss out on these adult relationships. But if you put them in a care group in your classroom every week, they're getting a contact. When your class has a fellowship, they're getting an invitation. When your class does a mission project, they're invited to do it. Even though they're in another class, you're helping them to stay connected back to that class. And this is where your staff probably have to help you figure out, well, this person probably should be in this room. Or if they came out of your class, you just put them back on there. But y'all, they need to be cared for. That kids are just not going to do that. And so that's a way for us to make that connection. Good questions. Any others? All right, Brother Zach, I turn it back over to you.